Anything would be better than this. And that is when I saw the boat.
Chapter 4. I knew of ships from paintings. I had heard of them in stories. They were golden and huge as leviathans, their rails carved from ivory and horn. They were towed by grinning dolphins or else crewed by 50 black-haired nereids, faces silver as moonlight. This one had a mast, thin as a sapling. Its sail hung skewed and fraying, its sides were patched. I remember the jump in my throat when the sailor lifted his face. Burnt it was, and shiny with sun. A mortal. Mankind was spreading across the world. Years had passed since my brother had first found that deserted land for our games. I stood behind a jut of cliff and watched as the man steered, skirting rocks and hauling at the nets. He looked nothing like the well-groomed nobles of Minos's court. His hair was long and black, draggled from wave spray. His clothes were worn and his neck scabbed. Scars showed on his arms where fish scales had cut him. He did not move with unearthly grace, but strongly, cleanly, like a well-built hull in the waves. I could hear my pulse loud in my ears. I thought again of those stories of nymphs ravished and abused by mortals. But this man's face was soft with youth, and the hands that drew up his catch looked only swift, not cruel. Anyway, in the sky above me was my father, called the watchman. If I was in danger, he would come. He was close to the shore by then, peering down into the water, tracking some fish I could not see. I took a breath and stepped forward onto the beach. Hail, mortal! He fumbled his nets but did not drop them. Hail, he said. What goddess do I address? His voice was gentle in my ears, sweet as summer winds. Circe, I said. Ah, his face was carefully blank. He told me much later it was because he had not heard of me and feared to give offense. He knelt on the rough boards. Most reverend lady, do I trespass on your waters? No, I said. I have no waters. Is that a boat? Expressions passed across his face, but I could not read them. It is, he said. I would like to sail upon it, I said. He hesitated, then began to steer closer to the shore. But I did not know to wait. I waded out through the waves to him and pulled myself aboard. The deck was hot through my sandals and its motion pleasing, a faint undulation like I rode upon a snake. Proceed, I said. How stiff I was, dressed in my divine dignity that I did not even know I wore. And he was stiffer still. He trembled when my sleeve brushed his. His eyes darted whenever I addressed him. I realized with a shock that I knew such gestures. I had performed them 1,000 times for my father and my grandfather and all those mighty gods who strode through my days. The great chain of fear. Oh, no, I said to him. I'm not like that. I have scarcely any powers at all and cannot hurt you. Be comfortable, as you were. Thank you, kind goddess. But he said it so flinchingly that I had to laugh. It was that laughter, more than my protestation, that seemed to ease him a little. Moment passed into moment, and we began to talk of the things around us. The fish jumping, a bird dipping overhead. I asked him how his nets were made, and he told me, warming to the subject, for he took great care with them. When I told him my father's name, it sent him glancing at the sun and trembling worse than ever. But at day's end no wrath had descended, and he knelt to me and said that I must have blessed his nets, for they were the fullest they had ever been. I looked down at his thick black hair, shining in the sunset light, his strong shoulders bowing low. This is what all those gods in our halls longed for, such worship. I thought perhaps he had not done it right, or more likely I had not. All I wanted was to see his face again. Rise, I told him. Please, I have not blessed your nets. I have no powers to do so. I am born from naiads who govern fresh water only, and even their small gifts I lack. Yet, he said, may I return? Will you be here? For I have never known such a wondrous thing in all my life as you. I had stood beside my father's light. I had held Aietes in my arms, and my bed was heaped with thick-walled blankets woven by immortal hands. But it was not until that moment that I think I had ever been warm. Yes, I told him, I will be here.
His name was Glaucus, and he came every day. He brought along bread, which I had never tasted, and cheese, which I had, and olives that I liked to see his teeth bite through. I asked him about his family, and he told me that his father was old and bitter, always storming and worrying about food. And his mother used to make herb simples, but was broken now from too much labor. And his sister had 5 children already and was always sick and angry. All of them would be turned out of their cottage if they could not give their lord the tribute he levied. No one had ever confided so in me. I drank down every story like a whirlpool sucks down waves, though I could hardly understand half of what they meant, poverty and toil and human terror. The only thing that was clear was Glaucus's face, his handsome brow and earnest eyes, wet a little from his griefs, but smiling always when he looked at me. I loved to watch him at his daily tasks, which he did with his hands, instead of a blink of power, mending the torn nets, cleaning off the boat's deck, sparking the flint. When he made his fire, he would start painstakingly with small bits of dried moss, placed just so, then the smaller twigs, then larger, building upwards and upwards. This art, too, I did not know. Wood needed no coaxing for my father to kindle it. He saw me watching and rubbed self-consciously at his calloused hands. I know I am ugly to you. No, I thought. My grandfather's halls are filled with shining nymphs and muscled river gods, but I would rather gaze on you than any of them. I shook my head. He sighed. Oh, it must be wonderful to be a god and never bear a mark. My brother once said it feels like water. He considered. Yes, I can imagine that. As if you are brimming like an overfilled cup. What brother is that? You have not spoken of him before. He is gone to be a king far away. Aetes, he is called. The name felt strange on my tongue after so long. I would have gone with him, but he said no.
He sounds like a fool, Glaucus said.
What do you mean? He lifted his eyes to mine. You are a golden goddess, beautiful and kind. If I had such a sister, I would never let her go. Our arms would brush as he worked at the ship's rail. When we sat, my dress lapped over his feet. His skin was warm and slightly roughened. Sometimes I would drop something so he might pick it up and our hands would meet. That day, he knelt on the beach, kindling a fire to cook his lunch. It was still one of my favorite things to watch, that simple, mortal miracle of flint and tinder. His hair hung sweetly into his eyes, and his cheeks glowed with the flame's light. I found myself thinking of my uncle who had given him that gift. I met him once, I said. Glaucus had spitted a fish and was roasting it.
Who?
Prometheus, I said. When Zeus punished him, I brought him nectar. He looked up. Prometheus, he said. Yes, he was not usually so slow. Firebearer. That is a story from 12 generations ago.
More than 12, I said.
Watch out, your fish. The spit had drooped from his hand and the fish was blackening on the coals. He did not rescue it. His eyes were fixed on me. But you are my age.
My face had tricked him. It looked as young as his.
I laughed. No, I am not. He had been half slouched to one side, knees touching mine. Now he jerked upright, pulling away from me so fast I felt the cold where he had been. It surprised me. Those years are nothing, I said. I made no use of them. You know as much of the world as I do. I reached for his hand. He yanked it away. How can you say that? How old are you? 100? 200? I almost laughed again, but his neck was rigid and his eyes wide. The fish smoked between us in the fire. I had told him so little of my life. What was there to tell? Only the same cruelties, the same sneers at my back. In those days, my mother was in an especial ill humor. My father had begun to prefer his draughts to her, and her venom over it fell to me. She would curl her lip when she saw me. Circe is dull as a rock. Circe has less wit than bare ground. Circe's hair is matted like a dog's. If I have to hear that broken voice of hers once more, of all our children, why must it be she who is left? No one else will have her. If my father heard, he gave no sign.
only moved his game counters here and there. In the old days, I would have crept to my room with tear-stained cheeks, but since Glaucus is coming, it was all like bees without a sting. I'm sorry, I said. It was only a stupid joke. I never met him. I only wished to. Never fear, we are the same age. Slowly his posture loosened. He blew out a breath. Ha! He said. Can you imagine? If you had really been alive then. He finished his meal. He threw the scraps to the girls, then chased them, wheeling to the sky. He turned back to grin at me, outlined against the silver waves, his shoulders lifting in his tunic. No matter how many fires I watched him make, I never spoke of my uncle again. One day, Glaucus's boat came late. He did not anchor it, only stood upon its deck, his face stiff and grim. There was a bruise on his cheek, storm wave dark. His father had struck him. Oh, my pulse leapt. You must rest. Sit with me, and I will bring you water. No, he said, and his voice was sharp as I had ever heard it. Not today, not ever again. Father says I loaf, and all our halls are down. We will starve, and it is my fault.
Yet come sit and let me help, I said.
You cannot do anything, he said. You told me so. You have no powers at all. I watched him sail off. Then wild I turned and ran to my grandfather's palace. Through its arched passageways I went to the women's halls with their clatter of shuttles on goblets and the jangle of bracelets on wrists. Past the naiads, past the visiting nereids and dryads, to the oaken stool on the dais where my grandmother ruled. Tethys, she was called, great nurse of the world's waters. Born, like her husband, at the dawn of ages from Mother Earth herself, her robes puddled blue at her feet, and around her neck was wrapped a water serpent like a scarf. Before her was a golden loom that held her weaving. Her face was old, but not withered. Countless daughters and sons had been birthed from her flowing womb, and their descendants were still brought to her for blessing. I myself had knelt to her once. She had touched my forehead with the tips of her soft fingers. Welcome, child. I knelt again now. I am Circe, Perseus' daughter. You must help me. There is a mortal who needs fish from the sea. I cannot bless him, but you can.
He is noble? She asked.
In nature, I said, poor in possessions, yet rich in spirit and courage and shining like a star. And what does this mortal offer you in exchange?
Offer me?
She shook her head. My dear, they must always offer something, even if it is small, even if only wine poured at your spring, else they will forget to be grateful after.
I do not have a spring, and I do not need any gratitude. Please, I will never see him again if you do not help me.
She looked at me and sighed. She must have heard such pleas 1,000 times. That is one thing gods and mortals share. When we are young, we think ourselves the first to have each feeling in the world. I will grant your wish and fill his nets. Yet in return, let me hear you swear you will not lie with him. You know your father thinks to match you better than with some fish boy.
I swear, I said.
He came skimming across the waves, shouting for me. His words poured over themselves. He had not even had to work the nets, he said. The fish leapt by themselves onto his deck, big as cows. His father was pacified and the levy paid with credit for next year. He knelt before me, head bowed.
Thank you, goddess.
I drew him up. Do not kneel to me. It was my grandmother's power. No, he took my hands. It was you. You were the one who persuaded her. Circe, miracle, blessing of my life, you have saved me. He pressed his warm cheeks to my hands. His lips brushed my fingers. I wish I were a god, he breathed. Then I could thank you as you deserve. I let his curls fall around my wrist. I wished I were a real goddess so I could give him whales upon a golden plate and he would never let me go. Every day we sat together talking. He was full of dreams, hoping that when he was older he might have his own boat and his own cottage instead of his father's. And I will keep a fire, he said, burning for you always, if you will allow me. I would rather you keep a chair, I said, so I may come to speak with you. He flushed, and I did too. I knew so little then. I had never lolled with my cousins, those broad-shouldered gods and lissom nymphs when they talked of love. I had never crept off with a suitor into a private corner. I did not know enough even to say what I wanted. If I touched my hand to his, if I bent down my lips for a kiss, what then? He was watching me. His face was like the sand, showing 100 impressions. "Your father," he said, stumbling a little, for speaking of Helios always unnerved him. "He will choose a husband for you?" "Yes," I said. "What sort of husband?" I thought I would weep. I wanted to press against him and say I wished it could be him, but my oath stood between us. So I made myself speak the truth, that my father sought out princes, or perhaps a king if he were foreign. He looked down at his hands. "Of course," he said, "of course. You are very dear to him." I did not correct him. I went back to my father's halls that night and knelt at his feet and asked him if it was possible to make a mortal a god. Helios frowned at his drafts in irritation. "You know it is not. Unless it is in their stars already, not even I can change the laws of the fates." I said no more. My thoughts were following upon themselves. If Glaucus remained immortal, then he would grow old, and if he grew old, he would die. And there would be a day upon that shore when I would come and he would not. Prometheus had told me, yet I had not understood. What a fool I had been, what a stupid fool. In a panic, I ran back to my grandmother. "That man," I said, nearly choking, "he will die." Her stool was oak, draped with softest weavings. The yarn in her fingers was riverstone green. She was winding it on her shuttle. "Oh, granddaughter," she said. "Of course he will. He is mortal, that is their lot." "It is not fair," I said. "It cannot be." "Those are two different things," my grandmother said. All the shining naiads had turned from their talk to listen to us. I pressed on. "You must help me," I said. "Great goddess, will you not take him into your halls and make him eternal?"
"No god can do so much."
"I love him," I said. "There must be a way." She sighed.
"Do you know how many nymphs before you have hoped the same and been disappointed?" I did not care about those nymphs. They were not Helios's daughter, raised on stories of breaking the world. Is there not some device, some bargain with the fates, some trick, some pharmaca?
It was the word Aeetes had used when he spoke of herbs with wondrous powers sprung from the fallen blood of gods.
The sea snake at my grandmother's neck uncoiled and flicked a black tongue from its arrow mouth. Her voice was low and angry. "You dare speak of that?" The sudden change surprised me.
Speak of what?
But she was rising, her full height unfurling before me. "Child, I have done as much for you as may be done, and there is no more. Go from here, and let me never hear you speak of that wickedness again." My head was churning, my mouth sharp as though I had drunk raw wine.
I walked back through the couches, the chairs, past the skirts of whispering, smirking naiads.
"She thinks just because she is daughter of the sun, she may uproot the world to please herself." I was too wild to feel any shame. It was true. I would not just uproot the world, but tear it, burn it, do any evil I could to keep Glaucus by my side.
But what stayed most in my mind was the look on my grandmother's face when I'd said that word. Pharmaca. It was not a look I knew well among the gods.
But I had seen Glaucus when he spoke of the levy and empty nets and his father. I had begun to know what fear was.
What could make a god afraid? I knew that answer too. A power greater than their own. I had learned something from my mother after all. I bound my hair in ringlets and put on my best dress, my brightest sandals. I went to my father's feast, where all my uncles gathered, reclining on their purple couches. I poured their wine and smiled into their eyes and wreathed my arms around their necks. "Uncle Proteus," I said. He was the one with seal meat in his teeth. "You are brave and led valiantly in the war. Will you not tell me about its battles, where they were fought? Uncle Nereus, what about you? You were lord of the sea before Olympian Poseidon robbed you. I long to hear the great deeds of our kind. Tell me where the blood fell thickest.
I drew those stories from them.
I learned the names of those many places that had been sown with God's blood, and where those places were. And at last I heard of one not far from Glaucus's shore.
Chapter 5.
Come, I said. It was midday and hot, the earth crumbling beneath our feet. It is very close, a perfect sleeping spot to ease your weary bones.
He followed sullenly. He was always ill-tempered when the sun was high.
I do not like to be so far from my boat.
Your boat will be safe, I promise it. Look,
we are here. Are not these flowers worth the walk? They are beautiful, palest yellow and shaped like bells.
I coaxed him down among the crowding blossoms. I had brought water and a basket of food. I was aware of my father's eye above us.
A picnic,
I meant it to appear, if he should glance our way. I could not be sure what my grandmother might have said to him. I served Glaucus and watched while he ate.
What would he look like as a god, I wondered.
A little distance away grew a forest, its shade thick enough to hide us from my father's eyes. When he was changed, I would pull him there and show him that my oath did not hold us any more. I set a cushion on the ground.
Lie back, I said. Sleep. Won't it be nice to sleep?
I have a headache, he complained, and the sun is in my eyes.
I brushed back his hair and moved so I blocked the sun. He sighed then. He was always tired, and in a moment his eyes were dragging closed. I stirred the flowers so they lay against him.
Now, I thought, now.
He slept on, as I had seen him sleep 100 times. In my fantasies of this moment, the flowers had changed him at a touch. Their immortal blood leapt into his veins, and he rose up a god, took my hands and said, "Now I may thank you as you deserve." I stirred the flowers again. I plucked some and dropped them on his chest. I blew out my breath so the scent and pollen would drift over him.
"Change," I whispered. "He must be a god. Change."
He slept. The flowers hung lank around us, wan and fragile as moth wings. A line of acid was tracing through my stomach. Maybe I had not found the right ones, I told myself.
I should have come to scout ahead, but I had been too eager.
I rose and walked the hillside, searching for some crimson clutch of blooms, vivid, leaking, obvious power. But all I found were common blossoms that any hill might have. I crumpled beside Glaucus and wept. The tears of those naiad blood can flow for eternity, and I thought it might take an eternity to speak all my grief. I had failed. Aetes had been wrong. There were no herbs of power, and Glaucus would be lost to me forever, his sweet, perishing beauty withered into earth. Overhead, my father slipped along his track. Those soft, foolish flowers bobbed around us on their stems.
I hated them. I seized a handful and ripped it up by the roots. I tore the petals. I broke the stem to pieces.
The damp shred stuck to my hands and the sap bled across my skin. The scent rose raw and wild, acetic as old wine. I tore up another handful, my hands sticky and hot. In my ears was a dark humming like a hive. It is hard to describe what happened next. A knowledge woke in the depths of my blood. It whispered that the strength of those flowers lay in their sap, which could transform any creature to its truest self. I did not stop to question. The sun had passed the horizon by then. Glaucus's lips had fallen open as he dreamed, and I lifted a handful of flowers over him, squeezing. The sap leaked, gathered. Drop by milky drop, I let it fall into his mouth. A stray bead landed on his lips, and I slid it onto his tongue with my finger. He coughed.
"Your truest self," I told him. "Let it be."
I crouched, another handful ready. I would squeeze the whole field into him if I had to. But even as I thought that, a shadow moved across his skin. It darkened as I watched. Past brown it went, past purple, spreading like a bruise until his whole body was deepest sea blue. His hands were swelling, his legs, his shoulders. Hairs began to push out from his chin, long and copper green.
Where his tunic gaped, I could see blisters forming on his chest. I stared. They were barnacles.
Glaucus, I whispered. His arm was strange beneath my fingers, hard and thick and slightly cool. I shook it. Wake up!
His eyes opened. For the passing of one breath, he did not move. Then he leapt to his feet,
powering like a storm surge, the sea god he had always been. Circe, he cried, I am changed.
There was no time to go to the forest, no time to draw him to me on the moss. He was wild with his new strength, snorting like a bull in spring air.
Look, he said, holding out his hand, no scabs, no scars. And I am not tired. For the first time in all my life, I am not tired. I could swim the whole ocean. I want to see myself. How do I look?
Like a god, I said.
He seized me by the arms and spun me, white teeth shining in his blue face. Then he stopped, a new thought dawning. I can go with you now. I can go to the gods' halls. Will you take me?
I could not tell him no. I brought him to my grandmother. My hands trembled a little, but the lies were ready on my lips.
He had fallen asleep in a meadow and woken like this. Perhaps my wish to turn him immortal was a kind of prophecy. It is not unknown in my father's children.
She scarcely listened. She suspected nothing. No one had ever suspected me.
Brother, she cried, embracing him. Newest brother! This is an act of the fates. You are welcome here until you find a palace of your own.
There was no more walking on the shore. Every day I spent in those halls with Glaucus the god. We sat upon the banks of my grandfather's twilight river, and I introduced him to all my aunts and uncles and cousins, reeling off nymph after nymph, though before that moment I would have said I did not know their names. For their part, they crowded him, clamoring for the story of his miraculous transformation. He spun the tale well. His ill humor, the drowsiness that fell on him like a boulder, and then the power lifting him like cresting waves granted by the fates themselves. He would bare his blue chest before them, strapped with god muscles, and offer his hands smooth as surf-rolled shells. See how I am grown into myself. I loved his face in those moments, glowing with power and joy. My chest swelled with his. I longed to tell him that it was I who had given him such a gift. But I saw how it pleased him to believe his godhead wholly his own, and I did not want to take that from him. I still dreamed of lying with him in those dark woods, but I had begun to think beyond that, to say to myself new words. Marriage. Husband.
Come, I told him. You must meet my father and grandfather.
I chose his clothes myself, in colors that showed his skin to greatest advantage. I warned him of the courtesies that were expected and kept to the back, watching while he offered them. He did well, and they praised him. They took him to Nereus, old Titan god of the sea, who in turn introduced him to Poseidon, his new lord. Together they helped him shape his underwater palace, set with gold and wave-rack treasures. I went there every day. The brine stung my skin, and he was often too busy with admiring guests to give me more than the briefest smile, but I did not mind. We had time now, all the time we would ever need. It was a pleasure to sit at those silver tables, watching the nymphs and gods tumble over themselves for his attention. Once they would have sneered at him, called him fish gutter. Now they begged him for tales of his mortality. The stories grew in the telling, his mother bent back like a hag, his father beating him every day. They gasped and pressed a hand to their hearts. It is well, he said. I sent a wave to smash my father's boat, and the shock killed him. My mother I blessed. She has a new husband and a slave to help her with the washing. She has built me an altar, and already it smokes. My village hopes I will bring them a good tide.
And will you?
The nymph who spoke clutched her hands beneath her chin.
She had been one of my sister and Perseus' dearest companions, her round face lacquered with malice. But now, speaking to Glaucus, even she was transformed, open, ripe as a pear. We will see, he said, what they offer me. Sometimes when he was very pleased, his feet turned to a flipping tail, and now it was.
I watched it sweep along the marble floor, shining palest grey, its overlapping scales faintly iridescent. "Is your father truly dead?" I said, when they were gone. "Of course. He deserved it for his blasphemy. He was polishing a new trident, a gift from Poseidon himself. During the days, he lounged on couches, drinking from goblets large as his head. He laughed like my uncles did, open-mouthed and roaring. He was not just some scraggled lord of crabs, but one of the greatest sea gods, who might call whales to his beck if he wanted, rescue ships from reefs and shoals, lift rafts of sailors from the drowning waves. "That round-faced nymph," he said, "the beautiful one, what is her name?" My mind had drifted. I was imagining how he might ask for my hand. "On the beach," I thought, "that shore where we had first glimpsed each other. Do you mean Scylla?"
"Yes,
Scylla," he said. "She moves like water, does she not? Silver as a flowing stream." His eyes lifted to hold mine. "Circe, I have never been so happy." I smiled back at him. I saw nothing but the boy that I loved shining at last. Every honor lavished on him, every altar built in his name, every admirer who crowded him, these felt like gifts to me. For he was mine. I began to see that nymph Scylla everywhere. Here she was laughing at some jest of Glaucus's. Here she was touching her hand to her throat and shaking out her hair. She was very beautiful, it was true, one of the jewels of our halls. The river gods and nymphs sighed over her, and she liked to raise their hopes with a look and break them with another. When she moved, she clattered faintly from the thousand presents they pressed on her. Bracelets of coral, pearls about her neck and strings. She sat beside me and showed them to me, one by one. "Lovely," I said, scarcely looking. Yet there she was again at the next feast, her jewels doubled, trebled, enough to sink a fishing boat. I think now she must have been furious that it took me so long to understand. By then she was holding her pearls, big as apples, up to my face. "Are they not the greatest marvel you have ever seen?" The truth is, I had begun to wonder if she was in love with me. "They are very fine," I said faintly. At last she had to set her teeth and say it straight. "Glaucus said he will empty the sea of them if it would please me." We were in Oceanus's hall, the air sickly with incense. I started. "Those are from Glaucus." Oh, the joy on her face. "All of them are." "You mean you have not heard? Oh, I thought you would be the first to know. You're so close. But perhaps you are not the friend that you think you are to him." She waited, watching me. I was aware of other faces too, giddily breathless. Such fights were more precious than gold in our halls. She smiled. "Glaucus asked me to marry him. I have not decided yet what I will say. What is your counsel, Circe? Should I take him, blue skin, flippers and all?" The naiads laughed like a thousand plashing fountains. I fled, so she would not see my tears and wear them as another of her trophies. My father was with my river uncle Echeloes, and frowned to be interrupted.
"What?"
"I want to marry Glaucus. Will you allow it?"
He laughed. "Glaucus? He has his pick. I do not think it will be you."
A shock ran through me. I did not stop to brush my hair or change my dress. Every moment felt like a drop of my blood lost. I ran to Glaucus's palace. He was away at some other god's hall, so I waited, trembling, amid his overturned goblets, the wine-soaked cushions from his latest feast. He came at last. With one flick of his hand, the mess was gone, and the floors gleamed again.
"Circe,"
he said, when he saw me. "Just that, as if you might say, foot. Do you mean to marry Scylla?" I watched the light sweep across his face. "Is she not the most perfect creature you have ever seen? Her ankles are so small and delicate, like the sweetest doe in the forest. The river gods are enraged that she favors me. And I hear even Apollo is jealous." I was sorry then that I had not used those tricks of hair and eyes and lips that all our kind have. Glaucus, I said, she is beautiful, yes, but she does not deserve you. She is cruel, and she does not love you as you might be loved. What do you mean? He was frowning at me, as if I were a face he could not quite remember. I tried to think of what my sister would do. I stepped to him, trailed my fingers on his arm. I mean, I know one who will love you better.
Who?
He said, but I could see him start to understand. His hands lifted as though to ward me off. He who was a towering god.
You have been a sister to me, he said.
I would be more, I said. I would be all. I pressed my lips to his. He pushed me from him. His face was caught, half in anger, half in a sort of fear. He looked almost like his old self. I have loved you since that first day I saw you sailing, I said. Scylla laughs at your fins and your green beard, but I cherished you when there were fish guts on your hands and you wept from your father's cruelty. I helped you when...
No, he slashed his hand through the air. I will not think on those days. Every hour, some new bruise upon me, some new ache. Always weary, always burdened and weak. I sit at councils with your father now. I do not have to beg for every scrap. Nymphs clamour for me, and I may choose the best among them, which is Scylla.
The words struck like stones, but I would not give him up so easily.
I can be best for you, I said. I can please you, I swear it. You will find none more loyal than me. I will do anything.
I do think he loved me a little, for before I could say the thousand humiliating things in my heart, all the proofs of passion I had hoarded, the crawling devotions I would do, I felt his power come around me, and with that same flick he had used upon the cushions, he sent me back to my rooms. I lay on the dirt, weeping. Those flowers had made him his true being, which was blue and finned, and not mine. I thought I would die of such pain, which was not like the sinking numbness Aedes had left behind, but sharp and fierce as a blade through my chest. But of course I could not die. I would live on, through each scalding moment to the next. This is the grief that makes our kind choose to be stones and trees rather than flesh. Beautiful Scylla. Dainty doe Scylla. Scylla with her viper heart. Why had she done such a thing? It was not love. I had seen the sneer in her eyes when she spoke of his flippers. Perhaps it was because she loved my sister and brother, who scorned me. Perhaps it was because her father was a nothing river, and her mother a shark-faced sea nymph, and she liked the thought of taking something from the daughter of the sun. It did not matter. All I knew was that I hated her. For I was like any dull ass who has ever loved someone who loved another. I thought, if only she were gone, it would change everything. I left my father's halls. It was the time between the sun setting and my pale aunt's rise. There was no one to see me. I gathered those flowers of true being and brought them to the cove where it was said Scylla bathed each day. I broke their stems and emptied the white sap drop by drop into the waters. She would not be able to hide her adder malice any more. All her ugliness would be revealed. Her eyebrows would thicken, her hair would turn dull, and her nose would grow long and snouted. The halls would echo with her furious screams, and the great gods would come to whip me, but I would welcome them. For every lash upon my skin would be only further proof to Glaucus of my love. Chapter 6. No furies came for me that night. None came the next morning either, or all that afternoon. By dusk I went to find my mother at her mirror. Where is father?
Gone straight to Oceanus, the feast is there.
She wrinkled her nose. Her pink tongue stuck between her teeth.
Your feet are filthy. Can you not at least wash them?
I did not wash them.
I did not want to wait another moment. What if Scylla was at the banquet, lounging in Glaucus's lap? What if they were married already? What if the sap had not worked?
It is strange now to remember how I worried that.
The halls were even more crowded than usual, stinking of the same rose oil every nymph insisted was her special charm. I could not see my father, but my Aunt Selene was there. She stood at the center of a clot of upturned faces, a mother and her baby birds, waiting to be crammed. You must understand, I only went to look because the water was so roiled up. I thought perhaps it was some sort of meeting. You know how Scylla is.
I felt the breath stop in my chest. My cousins were snickering and cutting their eyes at each other. Whatever comes, I thought, do not show a thing. But she was flailing very strangely, like some sort of drowning cat. Then, I cannot say it.
She pressed her silvery hand to her mouth. It was a lovely gesture. Everything about my aunt was lovely. Her husband was a beautiful shepherd enchanted with ageless sleep, dreaming of her for eternity.
A leg, she said, a hideous leg, like a squid's, boneless and covered in slime. It burst from her belly, and another burst beside it, and more, until there were 12, all dangling from her. My fingertips stung faintly where the sap had leaked.
That was only the beginning, Selene said. She was bucking, her shoulders writhing. Her skin turned grey and her neck began to stretch. From it tore 5 new heads, each filled with gaping teeth. My cousins gasped, but the sound was distant, like far-off waves. It felt impossible to picture the horror Selene described, to make myself believe I did that. And all the while she was baying and howling, barking like some wild pack of dogs. It was a relief when she finally dove beneath the waves. As I had squeezed those flowers into Scylla's cove, I had not wondered how my cousins would take it, those who were Scylla's sisters and aunts and brothers and lovers. If I had thought of it, I would have said that Scylla was their darling, and that when the Furies came for me, they would have shouted the loudest of all to see my blood. But now when I looked around me, all I saw were faces bright as whetted blades. They clung to each other, crowing, "I wish I'd seen it. Can you imagine?" "Tell it again," an uncle shouted, and my cousins cried out their agreement. My aunt smiled. Her curving lips made a crescent like herself in the sky. She told it again, the legs, the necks, the teeth. My cousins' voices swarmed up to the ceiling. "You know she's lain with half the halls. I'm glad I never let her have me." And one of the river god's voices rising over all, "Of course she barks. She always was a bitch." Shrieking laughter clawed at my ears. I saw a river god who had sworn he would fight Glaucus over her, crying with mirth. Scylla's sister pretended to howl like a dog. Even my grandparents had come to listen, smiling at the crowd's edge. Oceanus said something in Tethys's ear. I could not hear it, but I had watched him for half an eternity. I knew the movements of his lips. "Good riddance." Beside me, an uncle was shouting, "Tell it again!" This time my aunt only rolled her pearly eyes. He smelt like squids. And anyway, it was past time for the feast. The gods wafted to their couches. The cups were poured, the ambrosia passed. Their lips grew red with wine, their faces shone like jewels. Their laughter crackled around me. I knew that electric pleasure, I thought. I had seen it before, in another dark hall. The doors opened and Glaucus stepped through, his trident in his hand. His hair was greener than ever, fanned out like a lion's mane. I saw the joy leap in my cousin's eyes, heard their hiss of excitement. Here was more sport. They would tell him of his love's transformation, crack his face like an egg, and laugh at what ran out. But before they could say anything, my father was there, striding over to pull him aside. My cousins sank back on sour elbows. Spoil sport, Helios, ruining their fun. No matter. Perse would get it out of him later, or Selene. They lifted their goblets and went back to their pleasures. I followed after Glaucus. I do not know how I dared, except that all my mind was filled up with a grey wash like churning waves. I stood outside the room where my father had drawn them. I heard Glaucus's low voice. Can she not be changed back? Every godborn knows that answer from their swaddles. No, my father said. No god may undo what is done by the fates or another god. Yet these halls have a thousand beauties, each ripe as the next. Look to them instead. I waited. I still hoped Glaucus would think of me. I would have married him in a moment. But I found myself hoping for another thing, too, which I would not have believed the day before, that he would weep all the salt in his veins for Scylla's return, holding fast to her as his one true love. I understand, Glaucus said. It is a shame, but as you say, there are others. A soft metal ping rang out. He was flicking the tines of his trident. Nereus's youngest is fair, he said. What is her name? Thetis? My father clicked his tongue.
Too salted for my taste.
Well, Glaucus said, thank you for your excellent counsel. I will look to it. They walked right by me. My father took his golden place beside my grandfather. Glaucus made his way to the purple couches. He looked up at something a river god said and laughed. It is the last memory I have of his face, his teeth bright as pearls in the torchlight, his skin stained blue. In years to come, he would take my father's advice indeed. He lay with a thousand nymphs, siring children with green hair and tails, well-loved by fishermen, for often they filled their nets. I would see them sometimes, sporting like dolphins in the deepest crests. They never came into shore. The black river slid along its banks. The pale flowers nodded on their stems. I was blind to all of it. One by one, my hopes were dropping away. I would share no eternity with Glaucus. We would have no marriage. We would never lie in those woods. His love for me was drowned and gone. Nymphs and gods flowed past, their gossip drifting in the fragrant torchlit air. Their faces were the same as always, vivid and glowing, but they seemed suddenly alien. Their strings of jewels clacked loud as bird bills, their red mouths stretched wide around their laughter. Somewhere Glaucus laughed among them, but I could not pick his voice out from the throng. Not all gods need be the same. My face had begun to burn. It was not pain, not exactly, but a stinging that went on and on. I pressed my fingers to my cheeks. How long had it been since I'd thought of Prometheus? A vision of him rose before me now, his torn back and steady face, his dark eyes encompassing everything. Prometheus had not cried out as the blows fell, though he had grown so covered in blood that he'd looked like a statue dipped in gold. And all the while the gods had watched, their attention bright as lightning. They would have relished a turn with the Fury's whip, given the chance. I was not like them. Are you not? The voice was my uncle's, resonant and deep. Then you must think, Circe. What would they not do? My father's chair was draped with the skins of pure black lambs. I knelt by their dangling necks. Father, I said, it was I who made Scylla a monster. All around me voices dropped. I cannot say if the very furthest couches looked, if Glaucus looked, but all my uncles did, snapped up from their drowsy conversation. I felt a sharp joy. For the first time in my life, I wanted their eyes. I used wicked Pharmaca to make Glaucus a god, and then I changed Scylla. I was jealous of his love for her and wanted to make her ugly. I did it selfishly, in bitter heart, and I would bear the consequence. Pharmaca, my father said. Yes, the yellow flowers that grow from Cronus's spilt blood and turn creatures to their truest selves. I dug up 100 flowers and dropped them in her pool. I had expected a whip to be brought forth. A fury summoned, a place in chains beside my uncle's on the rock. But my father only filled his cup. "'Tis no matter. Those flowers have no powers in them, not any more. Zeus and I made sure of that. I stared at him. Father, I did it.
With my own hands, I broke their stalks and smeared the sap on Glaucus's lips, and he was changed.
You had a premonition, which is common, my children.
His voice was even, firm as a stone wall.
It was Glaucus's fate to be changed at that moment. The herbs did nothing.
No, I tried to say, but he did not pause. His voice lifted to cover my...
Think, daughter, if mortals could be made into gods so easily, would not every goddess feed them to her favorite? And would not half the nymphs be changed to monsters? You are not the first jealous girl in these halls.
My uncles were beginning to smile.
I am the only one who knows where those flowers are. Of course you are not, my uncle Proteus said.
You had that knowledge from me. Do you think I would have given it if I thought you could do any harm?
And if there was so much power in those plants, Nereus said, my fish from Scylla's Cove would be changed.
Yet they are whole and well.
My face was flushing.
No,
I shook off Nereus's seaweed hand.
I changed Scylla, and now I must take the punishment on my head.
Daughter, you begin to make a spectacle.
The words cut across the air.
If the world contained the power you allege, do you think it would fall to such as you to discover it?
Soft laughter at my back, open amusement on my uncle's faces, but most of all my father's voice speaking those words like trash he dropped.
Such as you. Any other day in all my years of life I would have curled upon myself and wept. But that day his scorn was like a spark falling on dry tinder.
My mouth opened.
You are wrong. He had leaned away to note something to my grandfather. Now his gaze swung back to mine. His face began to glow. What did you say?
I say those plants have power.
His skin flared white, white as the fire's heart, as purest, hottest coals. He stood, yet he kept on rising as if he would tear a hole in the ceiling, in the earth's crust, as if he would not cease until he scraped the stars. And then the heat came, rolling over me with a sound like roaring waves, blistering my skin, crushing the breath from my chest. I gasped, but there was no air. He had taken it all.
You dare to contradict me? You who cannot light a single flame or cool one drop of water, worst of my children, faded and broken, whom I cannot pay a husband to take. Since you were born, I pitied you and allowed you license, yet you grew disobedient and proud. Will you make me hate you more?
In another moment, the rocks themselves would have melted, and all my watery cousins dried up to their bones. My flesh bubbled and opened like a roasted fruit. My voice shriveled in my throat and was scorched to dust. The pain was such as I had never imagined could exist, a searing agony consuming every thought. I fell to my father's feet.
Father, I croaked, forgive me. I was wrong to believe such a thing.
Slowly the heat receded. I lay where I had fallen upon the mosaic floor with its fish and purpled fruits. My eyes were half blind. My hands were melted claws. The river gods shook their heads, making sounds like water over rocks. Helios, you have the strangest children. My father sighed. It is Perse's fault. All the ones before hers were fine. I did not move. The hours passed and no one looked at me or spoke my name. They talked of their own affairs, of the fineness of the wine and food. The torches went out and the couches emptied. My father rose and stepped over me. The faint breeze he stirred cut into my skin like a knife. I had thought my grandmother might speak a soft word, bring salve to soothe my burns, but she had gone to her bed. Perhaps they will send guards for me, I thought. But why should they? I was no danger in the world. The waves of pain ran cold and then hot and then cold again. I shook and the hours passed. My limbs were raw and blackened. My back bubbled over with sores. I was afraid to touch my face. Dawn would come soon, and my whole family would pour in for their breakfasts, chattering of the day's amusements. They would curl their lips as they passed by where I lay. Inch by slow inch, I drew myself to my feet. The thought of returning to my father's halls was like a white coal in my throat. I could not go home. There was only one other place in all the world I knew. Those woods I had dreamed of so often. The deep shadows would hide me and the mossy ground would be soft against my ruined skin. I set that image in my eye and limped towards it. The salt air of the beach stabbed like needles in my blasted throat, and each touch of the wind set my burn screaming again. At last, I felt the shade close over me and I curled up on the moss. It had rained a little and the damp earth was sweet against me. So many times I had imagined lying there with Glaucus. But whatever tears might have been in me for that lost dream had been parched away. I closed my eyes, drifting through the shocks and skulls of pain. Slowly, my relentless divinity began to make headway. My breath eased, my eyes cleared. My arms and legs still ached, but when I brushed them with my fingers, I touched skin instead of char. The sun set, glowing behind the trees. Night came with its stars. It was moondark when my Aunt Selene goes to her dreaming husband. It was that, I think, which gave me heart enough to rise, for I could not have endured the thought of her reporting it. That fool actually went to look at them as if she still believed they worked. The night air tingled across my skin. The grass was dry, flattened by high summer heat. I found the hill and halted up its slope. In the starlight, the flowers looked small, bled grey and faint. I plucked a stalk and held it in my hand. It lay there limp, all its sap dried and gone. What had I thought would happen? That it would leap up and shout, "Your father is wrong. You change Scylla and Glaucus. You are not poor and patchy, but Zeus come again." Yet, as I knelt there, I did hear something. Not a sound, but a sort of silence. A faint hum like the space between note and note in a song. I waited for it to fade into the air for my mind to right itself, but it went on. I had a wild thought there beneath that sky. I will eat these herbs. Then whatever is truly in me, let it be out at last. I brought them to my mouth, but my courage failed. What was I truly? In the end, I could not bear to know. It was nearly dawn when my uncle Archelaus found me, beard foaming in his haste. "Your brother is here, you are summoned." I followed him to my father's halls, still stumbling a little. Past the polished tables we went, past the draped bedroom where my mother slept. Aetes was standing over our father's draughts board. His face had grown sharp with manhood. His tawny beard was thick as bracken. He was dressed opulently, even for a god, robed in indigos and purples, every inch heavy with embroidered gold. But when he turned to me, I felt the shock of that old love between us. It was only my father's presence that kept me from hurtling into his arms. "Brother," I said, "I've missed you." He frowned. "What is wrong with your face?" I touched my hand to it, and the peeling skin flared with pain. I flushed. I did not want to tell him, not here. My father sat in his burning chair, and even his faint, habitual light made me ache anew. My father spared me from having to answer. "Well, she is come. Speak." I quivered at the sound of his displeasure, but Aetes' face was calm, as if my father's anger were only another thing in the room, a table, a stool. "I have come," he said, "because I heard of Scylla's transformation, and Glaucus's too." "At Circe's hands?" "At the Fates' hands. I tell you, Circe has no such power." "You are mistaken." I stared, expecting my father's wrath to fall upon him. But my brother continued. "In my kingdom of Colchis, I have done such things and more, much more. Called milk out of the earth, bewitched men's senses, shaped warriors from dust. I have summoned dragons to draw my chariot. I have said charms that veil the sky with black and brewed potions that raise the dead." From anyone else's mouth, these claims would have seemed like wild lies. but my brother's voice carried its old, utter conviction. Pharmakeia, such arts are called, for they deal in pharmaca, those herbs with the power to work changes upon the world, both those sprung from the blood of gods, as well as those which grow common upon the earth. It is a gift to be able to draw out their powers, and I am not alone in possessing it. In Crete, Pasiphae rules with her poisons, and in Babylon, Perses